Podcast, episode 41 for Monday, September 30th, 2013. Anime Expo Recap, Part 2. Well, here we are back at last with part two of our Anime Expo 2013 recap. Sorry this is so late, but as I said in the intro to the first part, work situation has been really crazy. I've been doing a lot of commuting, and by the time I get home, I'm just dead tired, and I don't have a whole lot of free time left either. And on top of that, I managed to catch the first cold of the season. And in fact, I still have it. I have to pause this recording every 5 minutes or so to cough up a lung. But I am getting better. I finally got some time this weekend, so I was able to finish editing this second part of our recap. And I had some time to start going through photos and videos. I started editing those, so hopefully I'll be able to post those sometime soon as well. So keep an eye on our Flickr and YouTube channels. Before we get into things, though, I do need to take care of some minor housekeeping around here. Unfortunately, it's time once again for me to ask you, my listeners, for help bringing this podcast and website to you. Finances are pretty tight, and basically everything I make at work has to go towards paying bills and taxes and all sorts of not fun but necessary stuff. And unfortunately, after all that's paid, I don't have very much money left for fun things like this website. As I said countless times before, I run this website completely out of my own pocket. I'm not a big-time podcaster like Leo Laporte. I can't live off of the podcast. And with equipment, servers, and stuff being as expensive as they are, basically I could use as much help as I can get. One way that you guys can help me out is by buying stuff through our affiliate links. Holidays are just around the corner, and it might be a good idea to start doing your holiday shopping, or maybe you just want to get something cool for yourself. But take a look at our affiliate links. They cost you nothing extra. You pay the same amount whether you'd use our links or not, and we get a little cut of the action that really helps us keep bringing this website to you. And we have quite a few affiliates. There's, of course, Amazon, who sells pretty much everything. Books, CDs, music CDs, DVDs, movies and TV shows, anime as well, of course. Computer equipment, software, you name it, they probably sell it. I mean, they don't call it Earth's biggest store for nothing. And we also have The Right Stuff, which has all sorts of cool anime goods, not just anime DVDs and Blu-rays, but also figures, wall scrolls, all sorts of cool things. And, of course, the by now infamous Sean's Deal of the Day. We've got CD Japan, which is your source for all manner of import CDs from your favorite J-pop and J-rock artists, as well as anime soundtracks, of course. And they also sell some other anime-related goods like character figurines and that sort of thing. And, of course, Crunchyroll. If you don't have a Crunchyroll premium account by now, by all means, where have you been? Get with the program. Crunchyroll is one of our favorite websites. It's the dream that us otaku have been having for years and years now. All you can eat, 24/7 streaming anime, no matter where you are on your computer, your mobile device, your smart TV. It's just awesome. Simulcast the same day that they are released in Japan, and a huge catalog of both current and previous titles. The Crunchyroll monthly membership is extremely inexpensive, and it goes towards the anime producers, so it helps bring more anime to us. And if you use the link on the Otaku no Podcast website to sign up, we get a little cut of that. And, of course, there's our friends at J-List, who sells just about everything you ever wanted from Japan. Anime goods, of course, statues, cell phone straps, calendars, capsule toys, and all sorts of cool things like that. They also sell tons and tons of Japanese food and drinks. You can get your favorite Japanese snacks there. Cool traditional Japanese culture items like geta sandals and chopsticks and bento boxes. Lots of books and other resources to help you learn Japanese if that's what you're interested in. And yes, they have those kind of items as well, if you catch my drift. Their catalog is just staggering, and you should definitely check them out. And Peter does a really cool cultural blog as well, where he blogs about cool observations and things in Japanese culture. So you should definitely check that out. And, of course, if you buy any of the J-List or J-Box products through our website, we get a cut of that as well. And we also accept donations. There's our PayPal donate button. And we also accept donations through Bitcoin. Also, it would really help us if you take our listener survey. This survey is used by our ad networks so that they know exactly what type of ads to offer to us. We haven't had any ad offers recently, so we could really use your help on this. Now, the cool thing about our ad partners is that we always get the final say as to what ads we run. So that way, I can promise you that there won't be any inappropriate ads. There won't be any ads for questionable or sketchy products. Every ad that I decide to air, it will be something that I truly and honestly believe in, or that is a well-known product, and you know, so there won't be any spam or scams or other hinky stuff. I make that promise to you. All we're asking is basically, you know, your typical demographic information. You know, what other podcasts you're interested in, how much your yearly salary, your education level, etc. And we are not asking for any personal information. You know, we don't ask for your email address or social security number. We don't track you. This is just anonymous statistical data that we're collecting. So if you could fill out our listener survey, we'd really appreciate it. The link is in the show notes, and it will literally only take you about a minute or two, tops. Speaking about the holidays, you know, getting your shopping done now would be a good thing. But that also means it's time once again for the Reverse Thieves Anime Secret Santa Project. This is a project that the Reverse Thieves have been doing for the past few years, and we've been thrilled to be able to participate, and we've had a blast doing so. Basically, a bunch of anime bloggers and podcasters get together, and we submit our names to the Reverse Thieves, and they sort of pair us off, and we recommend anime for the other person to watch and review. The catch is that we don't know who our recommendations are coming from. The Reverse Thieves keep that a secret until the end of the event. You know, it's that whole Secret Santa thing, which I'm sure you're familiar with. It's probably been used as a plot device in, you know, at least a few Christmas-themed anime episodes out there. It's a lot of fun, and it really helps get people to sort of go outside of their comfort zones and take a look at an anime that maybe they missed the first time around, or maybe they never really considered watching. And almost always, it's something that they end up liking. And in those rare instances that they don't, there have been some epically humorous, scathing, funny reviews posted. It's a lot of fun. And, you know, any of you out there blog or podcast about anime, I definitely recommend participating. You have until this coming Sunday, October 6th, to submit your information. The details will be in our show notes. And now it's time to conclude our coverage of Anime Expo 2013. But first, we have some sad news to report. This year, we learned that Anime Expo partnered up with the Make-A-Wish Foundation, and together they made it possible for a young girl, Senia, who suffers from a terminal heart condition, to attend Anime Expo. Make-A-Wish Foundation is a really amazing organization set up to allow children with life-threatening illnesses to basically fulfill their wildest dreams and wishes. You know, maybe become sheriff for a day, or ride in a hot air balloon, join the military, create a comic book. And in one famous example, a young child, Ben, suffering from, I believe, leukemia, his wish was to publish a video game to help kids cope with their diseases. And in that case, Make-A-Wish Foundation was actually able to partner up with LucasArts, the game studio, and they actually made this game, which they are generously giving away for free. And it's really an amazing organization. And when you have a terminal illness, it's, you know, a lot of hospital time and a lot of despair. And to be able to put a smile on these kids' faces and, you know, give them the opportunity to fulfill their dreams, it's just really amazing, and it brings a tear to my eye. Naturally, Make-A-Wish Foundation seeks the help of many, you know, individuals and organizations to help bring kids' dreams to reality. You know, for example, you know, if somebody wanted to play in a major league baseball game, you know, they'll go to a baseball team and, you know, they'll help out. Or maybe to meet a celebrity, you know, and all these you know, celebrities and, you know, sporting teams and stuff, they donate their time and to this. And it's just a wonderful thing. In the case of young Senia, her desire was to hang out at an anime convention. And fortunately, Make-A-Wish Foundation and the Anime Expo staff were able to fulfill her wishes. Many of the Anime Expo staff helped her out, you know, to get to events and to, you know, get in. And even a lot of the guests of honor helped out as well. You know, donated their time, autographs, you know, let her meet them. For example, she was able to get backstage passes to the Porno Graffiti concert, and she was able to meet the band and, you know, take pictures and stuff. It's just amazing. Sadly, though, we've learned that she has since passed on, but her visit profoundly affected the Anime Expo staff, especially in terms of how they view people with disabilities. And that's something that we're always harping on them about. You know, you'll hear later on in today's wrap up how, you know, we're continuously impressed by how their disabled services division is just upping their game every year, getting better and improving. And this experience with Senia, I think, really helped, bring that into focus. And I'd like to quote from their article here. Quote, "We only spent a few days with her and her family, but the time we spent with her was incredibly precious. Aside from the personal privilege we felt as fellow human beings, our experiences with her created fundamental changes in how we view our responsibilities as well as how we approach disability accommodations at our events. We hope to further develop sensitivity and awareness of those who need special accommodations for what we have been taking for granted, and we'll consider the point of view of people with disabilities while we plan our events and services." That's just a wonderful sentiment, and we applaud the AX staff and Make-A-Wish Foundation for their efforts. And our hearts and prayers go out to their friends and family in this difficult time. Several of us here at Otaku No Podcast have lost family and loved ones. And yeah, we know how that, we've been there. We know how you feel. So our thoughts and prayers go out to you. Finally, a couple pieces of errata. As it turns out, the Anime Expo has decided to donate the proceeds from the charity auction, which we talked about in this, to the Christian organization Crash Japan to help with the recovery efforts from the Tohoku earthquake and tsunami. Even though it's been almost, you know, over 2 years since the disaster, the area is still definitely in recovery mode. I mean, rebuilding is going to take years and years, and it's just a big undertaking, and they very much still need help up there. And Anime Expo tweeted out this announcement. Unfortunately, though, I can't find any other confirmation of this, either on the Anime Expo website or the website for the SPJA, the parent organization. One of my picks was Steins Gate, which I absolutely loved. If you've read the Otaku No Podcast website, you'll see that we put up a review of it a couple months ago. And I made a bit of an error. Talking about the English dubcast, I mistakenly, the actress who played Makase Kurisu, I called her Trina Nakamura. That was a mistake. Her name is actually Trina Nishimura. I apologize. And finally, one of my other picks, Space Battleship Yamato 2199. In my notes, I'd written that it was licensed by Aniplex. I have no idea where I got that from. I don't know what I was smoking for lunch that day. The new remake, Yamato 2199, was actually licensed by Voyager Entertainment, which is the same company that put out the original Star Blazers back in the day. And I had wondered whether they would be Americanizing this new Yamato the same way that they did with Star Blazers, you know, changing characters' names. Captain Okita became Captain Avatar, Susumu Kodai became Derek Wildstar, and so on. And it seems like they're going to do this at least partially. Voyager put out a trailer for Yamato, and in the trailer, in the subtitles, they actually called the ship the Argo, which is the which is what they named the Yamato in the original Star Blazers. But they kept, in this trailer, they kept the character names the same. So, you know, we had Captain Okita and Kodai and so on. So, I don't know. You know, we'll just have to wait and see until the final dub is released. We'll just have to see. And finally, Gatchaman is not on Anime Souls. My mistake. I must have gotten it confused with the very similar sounding Yatterman. So, oops, gomenasai. Okay, enough of that. Let's conclude our wrap-up of Anime Expo 2013. All right, is there anything else that anyone wants to mention?
Well, I will...
Well,
we'll mention about the masquerade. Something they did this year that they haven't done before is they had an introductory video for each costume. Sometimes it was the cosplayer talking about constructing the costume or what inspired them to do it. Sometimes they'd have a clip from anime that would set up the skit. But it threatened to drag things down in concept, but it actually worked pretty well.
Yeah, I thought so. I was kind of worried when the announcer said, oh, and this year we're going to have these intro videos. I'm like, okay, this could be bad, but it actually turned out to be great. I love the ones where, you know, they talked about their costume. I like to hear about, you know, their efforts or, you know, what their thoughts were and stuff. And I also like the ones that set up the skits because, you know, that gives kind of context to the whole thing. So I thought it was really well done.
And even you guys haven't seen every anime.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I wanted to thank Disabled Services. They've been getting better
absolutely.
And better every year.
Absolutely. And I think we can be held responsible for starting that trend because, mm-hmm. You know, many years ago at our first AX, we had a miserable time. I think, what was it? We had to fight for a chair so that Pam could take the weight off her knee during registration.
It was really, really hard. And I remember saying, you know, not only is this going to make it impossible for a lot of us to attend, but also they were setting themselves up for ADA problems. It was that bad.
It was really bad. And to their credit, they stepped up to the challenge, and every year it's just getting better and better and better. And,
I notice every year there's more and more disabled people attending.
Yes, you see a lot more wheelchairs. You see a lot more people with walkers and you know, crutches and stuff. And I think it's, you know, you can tell that, you know, these people are they're fans. I mean, I see people cosplaying in wheelchairs. It's like, you know, you got to wonder, you know, this really made it possible for them to attend, so it's a good thing.
It's wonderful, and even the buses were accessible. The only injury I got this year was getting out of a taxi.
I think they did have wheelchair lifts on at least some of the buses. I think you could if you talk to Disabled Services, you could actually request, you know, one to pick you up. I think they did have that capacity available. And also on the website and the program guide, they had, you know, resources for people, you know, to like rent medical equipment such as wheelchairs and power chairs and things like that. So they're really stepping up to the game here. So kudos. Anybody else have anything to say?
Nope. Only that I think that slowly but surely, Anime Expo is learning how to run a good con. You know, it's like for the longest time, you know, they've had this learning curve, and you know, kind of you know, one of the things that's so wonderful about Anime Los Angeles. Yes, I love that con.
They're old hands at this. They've been around the block more than a few times.
Yes, these are people who are secret masters of fandom. They have been, you know, doing cons for decades, and that's no exaggeration. And
they also do tons of other cons. I mean, they do Lost Con and
Lost Con's been around for decades, you know, and so it's like. They're just, you know, they've had a lot of learning to do, and they are learning. I got to give them credit.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, this year there were some, we had here was a failure to communicate. A lot of the staff that we talked to, they kind of didn't know where certain events were or how to get to certain buildings. I think it was felt to me noticeably worse than last year. So somewhere, I don't know, maybe there was a staffing change or a breakdown in communications or something. So, that's something that they should work on for next year. But,
they should give every staff member a program guide.
Yeah, a lot of them didn't have program guides. That was really weird.
Probably should straighten out press registration, too.
True, yeah. So let's see. Summarize. What did you, what do you guys like? What do you think they could do a little better on? And just kind of let's wrap things up here.
Well, I think I really enjoy the industry panels. I like, seeing premieres and stuff. I wish I could have seen the Blue Exorcist one, but I had to leave like right after Attack on Titan, and Blue Exorcist was right after that. So it's like I had to go and go do some shopping. But it's always been for me, as far as AX goes, just the industry panels and
and that's one thing that you cannot get at the smaller conventions.
No, and it's something where they're kind of getting to be in the same vein as Comic-Con. It's just mm-hmm. It's anime Comic-Con. So.
Exactly. Well, this is like what I was actually talking to Peter Payne of J-List. We have an interview from him that I'll be putting out. He's like, he likes Anime Expo because it's like Comic-Con for anime nerds. Mm-hmm. You really focus in on that, demographic, for lack of a better word.
They get some great guests and, it's just, it's amazing just how they've grown and, the people that they're getting in now, and mm-hmm. it's gone beyond expectation, really.
And they make an effort to populate their guest list with what's hot or what's
exactly
current right now. And amazingly, they were able to capitalize on the sudden popularity of Attack on Titan.
Well, yeah, what was it? 2,000 people in that panel for
wow.
Attack on Titan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
amazing.
So
something like that.
It was massive, absolutely massive. Yeah, I think for me, this con was very much Attack on Titan con. That's what I was mostly going for, and I was like, I need to go to this panel. I need to get some stuff that's Attack on Titan related from like the booths and Artist Alley. Like, I went to the Pony Canyon booth and I got a shirt and an animation cell, and got a bunch of little things from Artist Alley. And yeah.
Oh, I did actually forget one thing that I wanted to mention is this year's charity auction. Felt kind of meh to me compared even to last year's. They didn't feel to me like they had as many things up as they did last year. I don't know if they actually didn't receive as many things or if they're kind of holding things back for next year or what, but I don't know. Danny, do you have any comment on that?
I'd agree. I mean, there have been conventions where they've had items drawn by the guests of honor that have gone for thousands of dollars.
Yeah,
and there are people who have the budgets to do that who are sitting out in the audience. Here, the bidding was kind of anemic.
Yeah.
The things that went for the highest bids were the posters that were signed by all the guests, which were cool, but it's not one of the kind things. They sold three Attack on Titan posters that were signed by George Watt, and I bought one of those. But there really wasn't that much to get too excited about at the auction.
Yeah, and no amusing bidding wars like there have been in the past. I don't know if they're, because sometimes like they hold back items for future auctions. Like last year, I seem to remember they had items from like 2 years ago that they held on to. So I don't know if we'll see more stuff from this year in next year's auction or something. I don't know, but it definitely felt more meh to me. So Danny, you want to kind of wrap up with what you thought you liked and what you think maybe could do a little better on?
Sure. First, an observation. As we've noted, the attendance this year was over 61,000 unique attendees. Last year, I think it was 49,000, and that's a
40
huge,
something.
Yeah, it was around 49,400, according to the official statistics. So that's an increase of around 12,000 souls. And so you have to ask, what's the variable that would increase it? In the past years, there haven't been increases and sometimes some decreases because, as we've noted, the physical distribution of anime and manga, physical media, has diminished quite a bit to the point where there's only one or two companies out there that do it. And I think the clue to what has caused the increase could be found in the dealer's room, where if you go by the Crunchyroll booth, there were these huge throngs around it, the kind of throngs that used to be all around the Funimation and the ADV two-story booth. And, of course, ADV is history now. And what is happening, I think, is that while it's getting harder to find anime on DVD and harder to find people who buy DVDs, there's the availability of streaming and the state that we as anime fans in the 80s just kind of could dream about as a pipe dream, that you get fresh anime an hour after it's been broadcast in Japan, professionally subtitled and legally available, is pulling in more fans.
Yeah.
And I think it would, as Toonami was a draw for people in the early 2000s and Ghost in the Shell in theaters was a draw in the mid 90s, I think now companies like Crunchyroll and Funimation and the legal streaming services are, and Hulu, certainly a lot of
Absolutely.
Stuff on Hulu
yeah.
is pulling new fans in, and that is ultimately what's going to carry on anime fandom for the near future.
I mean, I have Crunchyroll on my phone, you know. I watch it, you know, when I you know, I sometimes work up north and I have, like, you know, 2 to 3 hour commutes by bus, and I can watch it on the bus, you know.
Yes, and now it's available on boxes like Roku
and the Apple TV.
And the Apple TV and Google TV, so you can actually watch it on your TV. I mean, last night we came home from Pacific Rim and watched the latest Attack on Titan on our flat screen TV. And that's just what you just dreamed of a few years ago.
Yeah, it's you know, we're living in the modern age for sure. Let's see, Michelle, do you have any final words?
I had a great deal of fun. It's one of the things that to use a cliche, the most fun you can have with your clothes on.
Yeah, and like you said, both you and Danny, I think, have said, you know, a lot of the fun is just, meeting other people. And one thing that they did, I noticed this year, is they actually put the various cosplay gatherings in the program guide. I don't recall them doing that before. I think they...
Yes, that is a really good thing, because oftentimes... basically people would have to try to organize things in email or
cosplay.com.
Cos.com or even Facebook. They've been doing it on Facebook lately.
Right. And I'd like to see them take it one step further. I missed a Dolphy Dream gathering. There was actually a Dolphy Dream gathering. I thought that...
Is that the one at the JW Marriott? Because I passed right by it.
Yeah. I think that might have been it. And it's like, it would be great if they would have doll gatherings also mentioned in the same in the same or similar way that they do with the cosplay gatherings, because there are a lot of people bringing their dolls. For example, Danny Chu had a booth.
Yeah.
And they had a 1/3 scale Itasha. You know, Itashas are those cars that have characters on them. The anime characters on them. And basically, what Itasha means is "ouch vehicle," because of the fact
that painmobile.
Painmobile, because it's very they're very brash and they're very. And they're very bold, and oftentimes they're a little tacky, but that's part of the fun of it. But anyway, they had a 1/3 scale one, and it's funny. There's video of Danny Chu and a few of his crew riding around it, and apparently it's one of those cars that have a an electric motor in them.
So it's, you know, it's like a clown car.
Like kiddie cars, yeah. And so, you know, there's actual video on YouTube of Danny Chu and a few other people riding around in this thing, but it was best used as a way of showing off Dolphy Dreams, and I had Yumiko with me.
Ah, so sweet.
I was able to pose her with a whole bunch of others, and I was not able to get the picture that I wanted to, which was to compare her to the doll that Danny Chu himself is putting out. There is now a new person who is manufacturing vinyl dolls. I love these vinyl anime aesthetic dolls, and Mirai Incorporated in Japan is actually working on two different dolls. They're both based on the Mirai Suenaga character, but one of them is just a plain vinyl doll that has a regular sort of interior armature, interior skeleton, and they're also going to put out a robo doll. You know, that they've actually developed a armature that is animated, and no, she will not be able to walk and dance like that doll that this Japanese guy built with Volk's parts, and he always brings that doll to Dolpas in Japan. That's amazing, but this one is going to be able to kind of make movements, and it will be able to indicate if you've got mail. It's going to interface with your computer, so it'll give you alerts, and it will have a voice, and it's going to be remarkable. And yes, it runs Android.
Where do I sign up?
Yeah, just follow Danny Chu's website, DannyChu.com. What's it? CultureJapan.jp, and it'll be there. I mean, he actually went and did this, and I got to give him props. He's amazing. He actually, you know, he not only dreams things, he follows through with them.
All right. So now's the time in the show when we usually bust out our anime picks. I have a feeling that somebody's going to pick Attack on Titan.
Maybe a couple people.
Yeah, probably a couple people. So why don't you guys go ahead and go first?
Ladies first.
Okay. Well, Attack on Titan. Where do I start with Attack on Titan? I actually started with the anime. I had heard a lot of good things about the manga, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna try this. By the first episode, I was already like, I need this for the rest of my life. And then I got to a point, a very important point of the anime where I was like, okay, I need to start writing the manga. Because it's like, yeah, spoilers, not good. But yeah, now I'm completely up to date with the manga now. Attack on Titan. Basically, it's probably the best show that's been put out in a while. It makes you feel lots of things and will make you cry and make you scream and make you just basically fall apart at the seams. I wouldn't really know what to compare it to. Maybe Ava, if it made a little more sense. Yeah, it's just it's an epic scale.
It's made of awesome sauce.
Exactly, made of awesome bloody gore sauce. I will say the manga is definitely more gory, but yeah, it's just and the animation is just you can with just about any show you can tell where they kind of skimped out on the budget and where the budget actually went to. With Attack on Titan, yeah, it's got some, you know, quality moments, but and kind of those moments where you think you're watching a slideshow. But the 3D maneuver gear sequences are just amazing. The soundtrack is amazing. Everything about this show is just amazing. And it's just, I would be hard pressed to really find something that's currently come out that's really gone to, you know, is at that level. Because lately, the shows that have been coming out, it's like, some are good, some are kind of mediocre. You know, you'll say, oh, that was pretty good. But this is just, it's just on a whole different scale. And just the size of it is just amazing. And I'm looking forward to more of it. And I will say that, you know, it's just going to keep getting better from here on out based on what I've read of the manga.
Mm.
And we're already at the halfway point. Yesterday, the 14th episode came out. And yeah, it's amazing to see how this grew. It just exploded. And anybody who follows me on Tumblr will know how crazy I am for the show. But yeah, it's just the scale of it is just it's mind blowing. Absolutely mind blowing.
I must watch this.
You must watch this indeed.
Yeah, I gotta check this out too.
And is it on Crunchyroll?
Yes, it is.
It's and Funimation and Hulu.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. We're talking about simulcasting all over the place.
The promotion for the show is pretty good.
Cool.
It's, yeah.
Awesome. All right, Michelle, I think you're up next, and I have a feeling I know what you're going to pick as well.
Oh, my God. One of the things that me and Liz and Ryan did, I got this call at the 11th hour saying, we're going to go over to the Plant movie theater in Panorama City, and we're going to go see Pacific Rim. And this was, you know, the first night out. This was the 10 o'clock premiere screening. And I was like, oh my God, I gotta check it out. And I made it down there, and I was blown away. I really was blown away. It's like I had an inkling this was going to be really, really good. I was at the Hero Complex. There's a thing that the LA Times does. They have a series of reports called Hero Complex, and they do a film festival. And one of the people who were featured this year was Guillermo del Toro, and I saw like one of his first movies that was just absolutely incredible. And he got a chance to talk, and they were going to show Pan's Labyrinth after he spoke. And since I've already seen Pan's Labyrinth and I've got it in my DVD collection, I was able to get home at a reasonable hour. So I stuck around for Del Toro's being interviewed live, and he just seemed just totally geeked out by this movie he was making. You know, he was finishing up Pacific Rim, and they showed a trailer that was only showed at Fanime. I believe it wasn't Fanime that they showed it at. It was WonderCon. And, that was the first time they showed it. This was going to be the second time. And they made a big deal about everyone putting away their mobile phones and turning them off because they didn't want anyone camcordering this. And I just saw 5 minutes of awesome. Wow. And it was like you could tell that Guillermo del Toro was just so geeked by the whole thing. He was his enthusiasm was so infectious, and so it was like, you know, shut up and take my money was basically my my attitude. You know, I wanted to see it right there. I mean, if they were actually going to say, oh, we're not going to show Pan's Labyrinth. I know that everyone's seen it. Here we've got a preliminary cut of Pacific Rim. Here, stick around for that. You know, that would have been just the capper of just a wonderful evening. But you know, I had to wait a little while. But it did not disappoint. I mean. Wow. We are talking, I mean, for one thing, it's like John Ledford can just hang it up. You know, his attempts to do a live-action Evangelion, he can't do it now. He cannot do it now because anything he would have come up with, anything him and the folks over at Weta Workshop would have come up with, they can't match this. They can't touch this. I mean, we are talking about huge kaiju that make sense as creatures. We are talking about, you know, these incredible creatures that just seem like, you know, they could have been an evolutionary burst from things that exist on the planet now. You know, just sharks and lizards and rhinos and so on and so forth. You know, these creatures are rooted in creatures we have seen go to the zoo. You can see creatures that that exist and that live, and that these, you know, are like a logical extension to those creatures, you know, a logical expansion and evolutionary leap from these creatures. And and the mecha, you know, they look like they mean business. These are mecha that don't look pretty. They aren't, you know, graceful and beautiful. These kick butt. These look like they have been through the wars. They look like old tanks and you know, old transport planes. You know what I'm saying? It's like they, the whole thing in Star Wars where they created a weathered universe, where they created, you know, vehicles with battle damage and stuff like that. They took this to its logical conclusion. You know, these mecha, you know, these Jaegers are, you know, they're tanks on two legs. They are, you know, they're real. You know, they came up with, they created a very believable clash between huge monsters and huge mecha. And the one thing that annoyed me about the movie, I'm sorry, doing a conversion from 2D to 3D, I don't care if it's like the best damn conversion ever done. You know, and some people are saying this is the best conversion from 2D to 3D they've ever done. But the fact of the matter is it does not look the same as 3D that was shot with two cameras that are synced together. You know, I am actually going to go back and see this movie in 2D because I want to see what the shots actually look like. I want to see what this world looked like, you know, through the viewfinder of the DP. I want to get a feel for what really was put on film, and it was actually put on film. It was shot on film, and it shows. And you know, this was not digital. This was very organic, very believable. And there are so many shouts out to great genre movies and great anime and great manga. You know, it's going to wind up being that people are going to get the Blu-ray or the DVD, and they're going to watch it again and again and again to see all the references, you know, because there are so many references. And I feel bad for the people who are working on the Godzilla movie as well, because, you know, and Legendary, it's funny, Legendary put this out, and Legendary is putting out the new Gojira movie. And it's like they've got big shoes to fill. They've got they've got huge shoes to fill with this. And also, you know, of course they're going to have the American you know, Godzilla Tears Up New York movie from a few years ago to live down as well. but yeah, it's like I mean, they've got some great actors in that. Ken Watanabe is in there, you know, and you know, there's some others their names escapes me, but I've got friends who are like, you know, major Japanese dramatic movie fans, and they're like, you know, oh my God, this is such an incredible cast. And the thing is, though, that it's like Pacific Rim is just so good. I'm afraid that people are going to be judging the new Gojira movie on, you know, for good or for ill against Pacific Rim. And it may not get a proper shake when that comes out in a few months.
You know, I have to admit, this one totally, totally surprised me. I mean, I was going to say, you know, I know where this is going. It's not pretty. I was prepared for the onslaught of humorously scathing reviews to go up online, but you're like the fifth or sixth friend who said, go see this. And I'm like, wow. And even the reviews that I'm reading now, it's like they liked it. So
72% fresh.
Amazing.
Yes, 72% fresh. This is a believable universe with huge monsters and huge mecha.
And you could just tell that Del Toro is a big anime fan. You know?
Oh, and he's an otaku just like us. He's been into this stuff for years and years and years. In fact, in some respects, as far as the 60s and the 70s, there was more penetration of Japanese pop culture into Mexican culture than there was in American culture. You know, a lot of stuff that, you know, that didn't get localized here, you know, and we're talking around the around, you know, like Kimba the White Lion and so forth. That era, you know, a lot of stuff that the Japanese grew up with, we didn't get, but the Mexicans did.
Hmm.
And yeah, it's like Guillermo del Toro grew up with this. He grew up loving this. You know, he's a stone cold otaku, and you know, it shows, and he's got the passion. This was a passion project. This was a passion project, and you can't beat that. You can't beat that. Danny, I know you you saw this. Let's hear your view on it.
Well, it's kind of hard to add anything to that. I thought I thought that they didn't they didn't just give you the big explosions. They gave you some human interest. They gave you some really appealing actors. And most of the actors in this are not big names in America. Probably the biggest names would be Idris Elba, who played Heimdall in the Thor movie, and Ron Perlman, who's in all sorts of things, including lots of Del Toro projects. Rinko Kikuchi was an Oscar nominee. She's very appealing in it. But yeah, it is just a fun movie. It's too bad that the Transformer movies came out first and were so stupid, and yet they've kind of shaped what the American populace thinks of as giant robot movies. And from what I hear, it is coming out to sort of a soft opening weekend, so let's hope it stays around for a while and picks up steam. But it is just pure cinematic pleasure. I did see it in IMAX in 3D. It's an okay 3D project, but visually, aurally, emotionally, it's a wonderful 2 hours in the cinema.
Awesome.
So should I go on to my picks?
Yes.
Attack on Titan's been taken. I do love Attack on Titan. It was just borne out by yesterday's episode where they have a character doing something that is absolutely repugnant and abhorrent, and you understand exactly why he did it, and you're kind of rooting for him.
He's my favorite character.
I could see how he could appeal to a lot of fans. I'll recommend a couple of other ones. Avi mentioned Rose of Versailles, which has been kind of forbidden fruit for about 30 years. It's been something that American fans in the know have known about, but hasn't been distributed legally here, and in fact, the manga still isn't available in the United States, but the anime has been made available by Right Stuff and Nozomi. It's been streamed on Viki.com, and you can find all the episodes there. And what you probably do if you watch the series on Viki is do exactly what I did. I watched all the episodes streaming on Viki, and then I went out and I bought the DVDs from Right Stuff because I want to own these in physical medium. It's a fantastic series. Yeah. It's the root of a lot of series that came after, such as Revolutionary Girl Utena, mm-hmm. and various other shoujo series, but it's so far superior. Rose of Versailles, for those who don't know, it's an adaptation of a manga that was done in the early 1970s, and it was animated between 1979 and 1980. It's a retelling of the life of Marie Antoinette from the time that she becomes the queen, the time she becomes engaged to the crown dauphin of France, to the time of her execution. And it started out as a fictionalized retelling of Marie Antoinette's life in the manga, but became about a secondary character who is Oscar Jarget de France, who is a woman who was brought up as a man to be a superior soldier and becomes the personal guard to Marie Antoinette. And they start out the same age, 14. It progresses until both women in their mid-30s. And the climax of the story is right at the storming of the Bastille. And in between, all sorts of stuff happens. The stuff regarding Marie Antoinette, it's all historically accurate. It does go into some things that people have speculated about and gives life to the speculation, but it's beautifully painted. It's done in an older animation style, so that may turn people off. Don't let it. It's a great series, and it's going to draw you right in. The other series I'm going
to... I am so looking forward
by the way... Yes, yeah. It is Bastille Day. Vive la France!
So sing the Marseillaise. The other recommendation I'd make, it's a series that just finished up on Japanese television, and it's available on Crunchyroll. People who've listened to this a few times may have heard me praise a series called Chihayafuru. This is the second season, Chihayafuru 2. It's just as good. It's just as fun. You won't believe how much you'll be interested in a Japanese card game. But it's a great sports anime about playing cards.
Awesome. I have several picks. A series that actually just recently finished with the somewhat awkward name Suisei no Gargantia, also known as the equally as awkward Gargantia on the Virtuous Planet, which you can't really say when you're drunk. It's on Crunchyroll, and it's directed by Kazuya Murata, who did Fullmetal Alchemist Sacred Star of Milos, and it's co-conceived by him, as well as Jen Urobuchi, who you'll know
Urobucher.
From...
Urobucher.
Yeah, Urobucher. But the story is not the same level of soul-crushing despair as Urobucher's.
It had a moment.
Yes, it did have a moment, but it definitely had an ending that brought you back up. So in the future, basically humanity has taken to the stars in the form of the Galactic Alliance of Humankind, who are locked in mortal combat against a weird sort of squid-like alien race called the Hidios, and we are losing. Leto is a soldier who's basically kind of born and bred for combat, and he is participating in basically this kind of, you know, last stand massive battle, and it does not go well. And he gets sucked into a black hole, basically, and ends up on a strange water-filled planet, which turns out to be Earth, after the effects of global warming, seas rose, and, you know, Earth is basically one big ocean, and the remnants of humanity are basically kind of spread out in these sort of loose city-state kind of entities, organized in collections of ships that basically form fleets. So yeah, it's kind of like Waterworld, but it doesn't suck like Waterworld did. Interesting characters, and I think they did a really cool thing. They actually made up a language for the Earth descendants. So at first, you know, they could not communicate, which, you know, that's the thing that always drove me nuts about sci-fi. It's like, oh, we just landed on this alien planet and we can instantly communicate with the inhabitants. Yay! You know, so, but they actually did a cool, you know, foreign language for these guys, which is really nice. Beautiful animation, maybe a little bit heavy on the CG, but it's awfully pretty. I really liked it. Pretty well paced, kind of drags in a little bit in places, but on the whole, pacing is good. It really heats up in the end, and there are a few you know, interesting twists and turns and reveals. I don't want to say more for spoilers. And ending was altogether completely satisfying. And definitely check it out. It's on Crunchyroll. Check it out. I would check it out soon, though, because at AX we learned that Viz has licensed it. And presumably they'll be streaming it on Neon Alley. And who knows when it'll disappear from Crunchyroll. So check it out now while you can. Next show is one that I just recently finished because I was waiting until I could get the second DVD in the series, and that is one that I've picked before called Steins Gate. And my friend Kevin got me the first DVD in the set for Christmas, and I was recently able to get the second, and oh my god. Long before being an anime fan, I was a sci-fi fan, especially of Star Trek. And that's Trekker, not Trekkie. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite genres of Star Trek sci-fi is the time travel series. You know, I just love it when, you know, time travel has always fascinated me. You know, the whole concept of it, you know, what if you could go back and change things, you know, right some grievous wrongs, if not, you know, in historical events, then maybe in your own lifetime, you know. But at the same time, you got to wonder, you know, the things that, you know, mistakes that I've made in the past have shaped who I am today. And if I, you know, eliminated those, you know, how would that affect me? You know, what consequences would meddling with the past have? So that whole concept always fascinated me. And Steins Gate just hit all the right buttons for me in that it tells the story of Rintaro Okabe, otherwise known as Hoin Kyoma, a self-proclaimed mad scientist and all-around goofball. He has a group of friends that he formed called the Future Gadgets Lab. They are ostensibly tasked with creating strange and largely unsuccessful inventions, but they mostly hang around, loaf about in their Akihabara headquarters, surfing the net, attending otaku events, going to med cafes, and various other random things. Anyways, one day, they unwittingly end up inventing a device capable of sending text messages back to the past. And that's when things go pear-shaped in a very big way. I mean, this story is full of, you know, sci-fi references, time travel, shadowy organizations spent on world domination, time paradoxes, butterfly effects. It's got it all. Like I said, it just pushed all the right buttons with me being a sci-fi slash Star Trek fan. In particular, the dub that Funimation did is absolutely phenomenal. You know, it is painfully evident when a dub cast didn't do their homework and they don't understand their character. This is not one of those cases. You could tell that they knew who they were portraying and they interacted with each other. It's just, the interactions are just awesome. You know, especially the two leads, I think it was J. Michael Tatum who played Okabe and Trina, I think it was Trina Nakamura, I don't know if I'm getting that name right, who played the female lead, Makase Krisu. They hit it off beautifully. They have this just wonderful, wordplay back and forth. It's just awesome. Just phenomenally well done dub. It is on DVD and Blu-ray, a very well put together set, and it's also streaming on Funimation.com. My last pick is a bit of an unusual one, and unfortunately it's not one that, if you want to go completely by the letter of the law, you can check out right now. And that's a series called Space Battleship Yamato 2199. Back in the day, you know, in the early days of anime, there were, you know, companies that basically took anime, translated it, sometimes changed the story around, and released it here in the States. One of the best examples of this is one I've spoken of countless times before, Robotech. It's the one that got me into this whole, you know, business to begin with. But there are others, even before Robotech. One of the more famous of those, you know, there's Battle of the Planets, G-Force, several others. One of the more famous of those, though, is a series called Star Blazers, which is based on a Japanese anime called Uchu Senkan Yamato, or Space Battleship Yamato. It was basically, they took it and dubbed it in English. They changed some things around and they released it. And this recently, they decided to remake it. I'm not exactly sure why. It's not like it's the 25th anniversary or anything, but they did decide to remake it, and they did an awesome job. You know, this is kind of in the same vein as the Sci-Fi Channel slash Ronald Moore remake of Battlestar Galactica. You know, the story is basically the same, but reimagined. Characters are kind of changed up a bit. They kept a lot of the same character designs, but if anything, they're more Matsumoto-esque this time around. Leiji Matsumoto was actually involved heavily in this. A lot more characters than the original version, especially women, which is great because now Yuki Mori has companionship on the ship. She was kind of the only woman in the original cast, and she was sort of the butt of a lot of the jokes.
Yes, I remember the episode where a bunch of the Yamato crewmen go mutiny on the Bounty, and they kidnap her so they can repopulate, so they can restart the human race.
Yeah, and this new series is definitely much less misogynistic than the original. For example, the resident robot analyzer is not so much a perv like he was back in the day.
Good.
And the enemy, the Gamelas, they're actually portrayed as much less of a one-dimensional enemy. You know, they actually have politics, they have factions, there's infighting, and there's some people in the Gamelas contingent who are just kind of, you know, sick of this whole war thing and, you know, maybe don't think it's such a good idea. And yes, there is Moe, but it doesn't ruin things. they kept a lot of the mecha designs, only they're modernized. You know, the Cosmo Zero fighters, they look awesome. The Yamato itself is really awesome. Very smooth animation, excellent battle sequences. Again, akin to the Galactica remake, you know, the battles are a lot more kinetic, a lot more realistic. You know, explosions don't look as cheesy, you know, etc. We found out at Anime Expo that I do not recall the company. I have it here on my notes as Aniplex, but I'm not sure of that. Anyways, a company has decided to bring this out with an English dub. We don't know when. We also don't know whether they'll Americanize it like they did the original. You know, back in the day, they changed the Yamato to be the Argo. They changed some character names. Susumu Kodai became Derek Wildstar and so forth. So we don't know if they're going to do that. They are calling it Star Blazers 2199, however. But it's definitely something that you should check out. And I think it's a good thing because it's introducing a classic to a whole new generation of fans, which I'm all in favor of.
Speaking of which, there's actually another couple picks I had, but one in particular is one that just started this season called Gatchaman Crowds, which is obviously based on the Gatchaman franchise and being done by Tatsunoko. And I actually have never seen the original Gatchaman, but for this series, I don't think you need to, because they're pretty good at explaining what's going on. So it's like, if you're going in cold and don't know anything about Gatchaman, you won't be missing anything, but I think it would probably help the experience. So it's like, I think I might actually watch the original series because of that, just to kind of get a background.
I believe it's on Anime Souls, I think.
Is it?
It's on Crunchyroll.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
In fact, I watched the first episode last night, and I have watched the original Gatchaman. I was kind of disenchanted with this.
Gatchaman was another one of those series that in the early days it was brought over as Battle of the Planets.
And G-Force and something else. Yeah, it's been through a lot of licenses.
But I'm excited to see where it goes, because the animation, especially of their mech suits, remind me a lot of Tiger and Bunny. And I liked Tiger and Bunny quite a bit.
Cool.
Yeah, and I like the main character a lot. She's kind of silly, and yeah, she's pretty weird. And I like weird female characters. So, yeah. And I'm trying to think if there's another one. What a lot of people are liking right now, which is Kyo Ani's series for the season, is a free, which is finally some fan service for the girls. But I don't think, for me, so far, it feels a little bit more than that. There's obviously something going on with the one of the main characters, and kind of just got trying to figure out what went wrong with him to make his personality change so drastically. And the characters are a lot of fun. I really like that one character's sister, because she's very relatable in the fact that she kind of speaks for the fandom when she's like looking at these guys and she's like, oh my god, his triceps, and just kind of fawning over them.
The Fujoshi contingent.
Yeah, pretty much. So yeah. Just real quick, there's also one called, oh goodness, Watashi ga motenai no wa do kangaete mo omaere ga warui.
There's a title for you.
Yeah. Or you could say Watamote. It's roughly translated as, it's not my fault I'm not popular.
I've heard of this, yes.
Yeah, it's a manga. This just came out, first episode, and I was laughing so hard and yet feeling so bad because I could relate to a lot of the awkwardness that girl felt and just being like, I don't know how to talk to people and... But it's a really funny series. I definitely recommend it.
Cool. All right. Well, let's see. Now is the time when we go through our various places you can see us. Of course, there's our website, otakunopodcast.com. I am furiously working on a set of Anime Expo blog posts that should be hopefully up by the time people listen to this. I've got almost 2,000 pictures from Masquerade that I still have to go through, and those will be going up on our Flickr. I've got videos as well that will hit our YouTube channel. I'm going to try and get all this done before the month of July is over. Avi, I know you've started posting pictures on your Tumblr. I'll link to those. Definitely check all that stuff out.
I do have a video that I did kind of record the Attack on Titan panel. I've got basically the two parts, the one part that was before they started showing the production notes and after, which was the Q&A. But I'll have to either edit that myself or send it to you to edit.
Cool.
It's on a cell phone. It's not that great, but it's something.
Exactly. All right. Well, I think we did a pretty good job of
I just want to let Michelle. Everyone know that you can find me at tokyopop.com. That's the website that I personally maintain for Tokyo Pop. And I can also be seen on Tokyo Pop's Facebook. And, you know, buy some of our swag. We just recently announced that it was announced at AX by Right Stuff that we are going to be putting out Volume 4 and Volume 5 of Italia. So that will be as print on demand through Right Stuff. Right Stuff are awesome. Patronize them too.
So they're doing the same way they did the previous volume.
Yes, yes, and awesome. They will all look right on your bookshelf. We promise.
Yeah, they're doing the. They're matching the spines.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I'm really glad that the manga industry has decided to adopt print on demand, because you know that's, you know, a lot of book authors are really fighting that to be a godsend, and for manga it makes sense.
Yes, it does.
They should utilize Kickstarter too.
Exactly. There you go.
And also, let's not forget that you know, ebooks are incredibly cool, and you know, right now we've got a bunch of our back catalog. Most, you know, pretty much all of this is original English language manga. You know, we refer to it as global manga now because it's not just American authors; they're all over the world. And, I can't really give detail on this, but you may see some old favorites coming back.
Nice.
So I just wanted to thank all of you for helping me. I really enjoyed the convention this year. And the Disabled Services is very good about allowing you to have friends go in with you and,
yes,
and help you with things. And I couldn't have done it without you, so thank you all very much.
Oh, we love to have you around. Michelle, don't you want to give a plug to Odagenki? We should get the word out on that.
Okay. I have two fitness-related websites. One is called lessfatchick.com, and the other one is called otagenki.com. And what I'm trying to do with the latter is I'm trying to get all of us otaku off the couch and doing something physical. You know, I'd love it if more people brave the big blue room with the big yellow light. But even if you're more of a indoor person, getting up and moving is just awesome, and it doesn't make you a jock. It doesn't make you not a geek. I mean, I have met plenty of people in my CrossFit adventures and in my distance walking adventures who are geeks, and they are geeks, you know, from the heart, and they are also trying to get healthy, and you know, going out and getting active and eating clean. And, you know, it's, I have to say this, I feel better than I have in a long time. Allergies accepted. you know, you can't really do much about your allergies. But other than that, I haven't been this healthy in my entire life. And I really want to encourage people to start getting active. You know, I'm not going to say, you know, go out and do marathons. I'm not going to say, you know, go paleo or go vegan or whatever. You know, modest changes to your intake of food, you know, modest changes to your activity level. I find that, you know, I guess this is another pick, another favorite. Go get yourself a Fitbit. Those are wonderful. You know, they're perhaps the most accurate, right out of the box, pedometers you can get, and they sync with your computer, and it winds up turning fitness into a beat your high score game. So all you gamer types, you know, it's that kind of good feeling, you know, beating that game, you know, going out and doing, you know, getting more activity and seeing the step count mount, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Just to echo what Michelle is saying, especially as you're getting older, it's important to get more active, because the older the machinery gets, the more maintenance it requires. Mm-hmm. My tip for getting fit for anime fans, and something I've done for a couple of decades, is get a piece of stationary exercise equipment for your home, a used stationary bike, something, put in front of it a little flat screen TV with HDMI, PC, and a component, whatever connections, and then attach to it a Blu-ray player or a DVD player or a computer, put anime on it.
Yeah, or an iPad with a Crunchyroll app.
Or plug in your telephone if it's got a mini HDMI port, but play anime on it.
Yeah. Watch Attack on Titan
Bicycling
and say, I'm going to get those Titans.
View it as an excuse to watch anime for 28 to 30 minutes and feeling good about it.
Yep. Yeah, great idea. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for coming on with me this afternoon. And we'll see you next year.
Sie sind aus Essen und wir sind Diego.
Well, that does it for our wrap-up of Anime Expo 2013. A lovely event. We always look forward to going every year. And I hope that we'll be allowed to continue attending. Remember, though, we still have some more Anime Expo coverage coming, pictures and videos, as well as our interview with Peter Payne from J-List. So keep an eye on the Otaku No Podcast website. And that about does it for this episode of Otaku No Podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. Remember, as always, if you have anything you'd like to say, maybe you have a comment or a question for us, please contact us. You can email us at feedback@otakunopodcast.com. We have our voice call-in line. You can leave us a message via Skype. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook. There are a ton of ways to get in touch with us, and all of those can be found on the Contact Us page on the Otaku No Podcast website. Also, do remember to check out the website for our blog postings in between episodes, as well as other, you know, important announcements and stuff. And check out the various other places you can find us online. Twitter.com/otakunopodcast, Facebook.com/otakunopodcast, Tumblr.com/otakunopodcast, our YouTube channel. We're everywhere, people. So please check us out. Anyways, that's it for today. I'll see you next time.